There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
This podcast is an unscripted, unedited conversation about true crime. We take the cases very seriously, but I don't take myself seriously at all, and neither should you. Welcome to Wife of Crime.
So, Russ, I've told so many cases on this podcast that prove to us that jumping to conclusions too soon can have grave consequences. But in the case I'm telling you today, not only did cops jump to conclusions, but they also never took responsibility for doing it. This is the case of Ryan Waller and Heather Kwan. Everyone, welcome back to Wife of Crime, a true crime podcast where I tell my husband Russ true crime stories and he reacts to them.
What's up, folks? We're back. It's me, Russ, aka the drain hair cleaner.
The drain hair cleaner?
Bro, every time I go in the shower, it's like a ball of fur in there. It's disgusting. And then
I can't help it.
And then you have the nerve. You'd be like, what do you do around the house? I clean the drain.
I can't help it. Women can relate to me. Everyone listening can relate. Our hair just falls out. I can't believe that I'm not bald, to be honest.
I was about to say, I'm surprised you're not a bald head scallywag.
I'm surprised, too. With the amount of hair that comes out of my head, I'm surprised, too. It's kind of crazy. We've talked about that before. Do you remember when we talked? It was probably like 2 years ago, how you talked about finding my hair in your underwear.
Dude, I was drinking a cup of coffee, and I always drink a coffee out of like kind of a sippy cup because I always spill my coffee.
He does.
and you know, like the sippy cup, like the thermal cups, I call it, but it's a grown-up sippy cup. It keeps it warm. So there's a little hole in the sippy cup. I'm drinking. Out of the hole comes, I pull the cup away from my mouth. There's a long hair in between my two big front teeth. And it's not funny.
No, it's disgusting.
Yeah.
If it was me drinking that and someone else's hair got in my mouth, I would literally vomit on the spot. Surprised you didn't vomit. I'm so sorry. I really felt so bad.
And I have another grievance to file with the Wife of Crime family.
What?
So two nights in a row I'm sleeping, peaceful mm-hmm. sleeping. You know, I don't sleep that peaceful. I toss and turn a lot, but needless to say.
Uh-huh.
Two nights in a row, I wake up on the TV to this girl getting pounded out. They're having sex on my TV, going at it, boy.
Okay.
When I say at it.
Okay, but I'm asleep, so this is what's happening.
So just put this show on. Just watching porn while I'm sleeping.
No. So
it's like Cinemax porn, you know, or like when you was a kid and you had cable and you would flip the channel back and forth to try to see a titty.
Well, let me just explain myself. So one of my coworkers told me about this show on Hulu.
Which one's the pervert?
I'm not calling him out.
It's a boy?
Yes.
Oh, I know who it is.
No, it's not. It's not who you think. He told me about this show called Tell Me Lies on Hulu, and it's about a relationship.
Don't watch it.
But every time I start to watch it, the last two nights I started watching it, and both nights I fell asleep like as soon as the couple met. So I haven't gotten to any of the raunchy sex part.
Two nights in a row. And then... And then it's the worst acting ever. It's literally porn acting because after they're done, the sex scene lasts a long time.
You watched the whole thing?
I was waiting to see if there'd be a boobie. And then I was like, yeah, they really are naked. I wasn't sure if it was a porn or just like a quick sex scene.
Yeah.
But.
Oh, so it's like really raunchy sex.
Dude, this noise woke me up.
Okay, stop. So I haven't gotten to that part yet. I fall asleep before they even fall in love. I'm still on the part where they just met. So I didn't know the sex was that bad.
Well, spoiler alert, they move on very quickly.
Okay.
And it's the worst acting ever. Don't watch it. If you want to see the... If anyone knows them, tell them go to acting classes.
Okay. Well, anyway, sorry about that. I'm not watching porn while you sleep. I was watching an actual show. It's an FX show. I think FX makes it.
So I have no more grievances to file, but okay. If I do, this is where I can air them out, because if we wasn't here, you might deny it or tell me shut up.
Well, hopefully some husbands can relate or boyfriends can relate to you.
So this is a true crime podcast.
Yeah.
So we should get back on track.
Yes, we should get back on track. So first of all, I want to thank everybody who's given us 5-star reviews lately, because we have gotten so many 5-star reviews. It's kind of never ending. Russ and I are so excited about all these 5-star reviews. Thank you guys so much. And yes, we do pick a Russ picks a review of the
Jess
week.
Jess has no input.
I have no input whatsoever on the review of the week. But just shout out to everybody who's given us a 5-star review. Our reviews have gone up significantly this year, and it just means a lot to us.
You know what's crazy to me? When we started the podcast, I told Jess, I was like, you know, I bet I'll podcast with the reviews on app on the iTunes thing will probably settle around 4.6 or so.
Yeah, because
like
of you.
Yeah, like not everyone's going to like me. But if you don't like me,
just kidding.
There's something wrong with you. So our reviews went up and we're up to like a 4.9 out of 5.
That's, I know.
That's pretty good.
We got really excited. So anyway, go ahead. You have your review of the week. Go
All
ahead
right. So this is my review of the week. It's from Todd. It says, Mimbo. Fun podcast, but Russ at times remind me of the Seinfeld episode with Tony the Mimbo. Hope that's not due to the plate in your head, brother. All in good fun, sir. So do you know what Mimbo is?
Yeah, I looked up Mimbo when I saw the review. I mean, I've watched Seinfeld many times, and I couldn't remember that specific character, so I looked it up.
So he's a super handsome dude. Seriously, that's his character.
He is.
Yeah. A handsome dude that Elaine's dating, but the guys think he's a male bimbo because he's an airhead. He does extreme sports. He's handsome, like me.
So you identify with Tony the Mimbo.
So I take this as a compliment. And then Mimbo messed up his face on like some wild adventure he was doing.
Oh.
And then he was no longer attractive. And I think like they broke up. I don't remember the end of it.
Well, did Larry David know you and write this character based on Russell? Russ the Mimbo.
Don't call me that.
Aww.
Hashtag Jess the Hater. Bring it back.
All right. Well, that was really good. Todd, thank you for your review.
Clever.
It was clever. Russ loves a good roast. We all know that.
Yeah, and I actually took it as a compliment.
Good.
Yeah, they think he's an airhead. I'm like, all right.
Good.
In my head, I could have nothing in there if I want.
That's true.
So we have a Patreon where we do true crime and chill episodes, which where we watch documentaries, talk about them and shit, and we got a whole bunch of them.
Yes, and this month for December, we are going to cover the Texas killing fields. Now, we covered this case all the way back in 2019. It's an insane case out of Texas.
Cases, I believe.
It's multiple cases, absolutely. But Crime Scene, the ones that did the Cecil Hotel and they did the Times Square Killer, they now did a 3-part docuseries called Texas Killing Fields. And when we did our recording of it, they didn't have any suspects named. They had like people of interest, but no actual suspects. Well, now they have actual suspects. So I'm really excited to watch this docuseries and see the developments in the case and kind of just elaborate on what we spoke about before. But I know for a fact, Russ doesn't remember anything.
You know what I do remember about it is I remember there's a field with bodies in it, but that's kind of like every...
Yeah, but it's multiple bodies.
Yeah, like a lot of bodies.
Yeah. So that's what we're covering for December True Crime and Chill.
And you get like free mugs and we interact over there a little more. But these are the people that joined Patreon this week. So shout out to you guys. It's Lauren, Tiara, Simone, Alicia, Devin, Christian, Caitlin, Nicole, Sherry, David, Bianca, Three Kims, Latoya, and Tina. Get at me,
you
dog.
You brought it back.
Cheers to you guys.
Cheers, guys.
I have a whiskey with ice, so my ice is a little melted, so you can't hear it jingle.
Cheers, guys. Thank you so much. All right, let's get into it. This case has me shook. has me shook.
I can't wait to Mobb Deep, so I ain't never shook.
I can't wait to tell you this.
Scared to death, scared to look.
Insane.
I ain't that.
All right, so there's an ongoing theme in true crime, and especially in this true crime podcast, because of the types of cases I choose to tell. We should never jump to conclusions too soon.
That's the profiler's job.
Well, I feel like a lot of cases I choose, we kind of end up at that conclusion, that jumping to conclusions too soon is never a good idea. The case I'm telling you today looks open and shut, seems obvious to the untrained, or shall I say, poorly trained eye. But we know there is usually more to the story. As a medical professional, especially one with my background, this case breaks my freaking heart.
I hope it ain't kids.
It makes me incredibly angry, and I think it'll make you angry too.
Ugh.
And well, everyone listening.
You know, that's part of your job, though, as a wife. I feel like it's just to make me angry and tell me what to do.
Well, this case will definitely make you and all of our listeners angry. This was a suggestion on my case suggestion link that I have in our Linktree. So
where can they find Linktree? Because everyone says, what's a Linktree?
Linktree is in our bio of our socials.
And what's a social for the older folks?
Our social media.
Okay. So go to Instagram. It's Wife of Crime Pod. That's the main one. And that's it. Just go there.
So thank you so much to the person who suggested this. I had heard this case before, but never actually researched it. Turns out the media messed up some details. So there is a lot of misinformation out there. So shout out to the YouTube channel, This Is Monsters. I watched the documentary that you produced about this case, and it was very well done. And it had firsthand interviews with family, which is incredibly important when you are fact checking.
I want to make a documentary. We got this camera. We should make a documentary.
Maybe one day. So this is the insane story of Heather Kwan and Ryan Waller. Are you ready?
Yep.
Ryan Waller and Heather Kwan were a young couple from Phoenix, Arizona. They knew each other most of their lives, but started dating in or around 2004 when Ryan was 17 and Heather was 19. In 2006, the two decided to move in together. They ended up renting a house in a Phoenix suburb, and life was going really well. Ryan was actually an aspiring musician, and according to his family, he was like a natural guitar player.
That means he was broke.
No.
Musicians are always broke.
No, he wasn't broke. He worked full time, but he played guitar.
Oh, so he wasn't like...
He wasn't like out there, you know, doing it, like pursuing it like people do in New York when you're like a starving artist up here.
They think it's cool to be hungry and wear used clothes that don't fit. Well, you should probably, you know, you don't look good like that.
Well, Ryan was a guitar player, the type that could like hear a song and then within an hour could play the entire thing.
What's his last name? Kwan?
No, this is Ryan Waller.
Who's Kwan?
Heather Kwan.
Oh, I was thinking of Big Homie Kwan.
No.
It's a rapper.
He was that good. And Ryan and the people closest to him thought that he would make it really big one day. His whole family believed it. Heather, on the other hand, was a bit more studious. Like, she focused on college, and she was planning to go to law school with hopes of becoming a prosecutor someday. Mm. According to friends and family, the two seemed really happy, and they got along really well. On December 25th, 2006, Ryan and Heather made plans to head over to Ryan's dad's house for Christmas dinner with Ryan's whole family. As the day progressed, everyone showed up to Don's house, who is Ryan's dad, and as the dinner started, the couple hadn't arrived yet. So the family members started getting a little concerned. They're like, okay, where's Ryan and Heather? They started calling them to see what their ETA was, but no one was answering their phones. So dinner started and then ended, and then over the course of a couple hours, no one had heard from Ryan. So Ryan's dad, Don, is now getting like really worried. This is not like his son. They were very close. So he had just spoken to him the day before and made all these plans. It didn't make any sense to him that Ryan would just disappear and not tell anybody.
Did they live far?
No. Mm-mm. They lived pretty close. So Don decides to go check on his son.
I always think, like, if someone's missing, or, like, sometimes if you take long, I always think car accident.
Yeah, so Don didn't know what was going on, but
yeah, like, when you sit outside on your phone with your mom in the parking lot of our complex, I hate that, because I always think, oh, did she get in a car accident or something? But then again, you wouldn't die if you got in a car accident in New York. She only went like 20.
So Don was really concerned, and he didn't know what was going on. He decides to go and check on his son, and so he drives over to his house. Don knocks on the door, but no one answers. He doesn't see Ryan's car, but the garage door was also closed, so he doesn't know for sure if the car was in there.
Yeah.
They knocked on the front door multiple times. No one answered. He tried looking in the windows. He couldn't see anything. But Don had a feeling that something just wasn't right. Around 10 minutes to 8, he decides to call police and let them know that his son and his son's girlfriend didn't show up for Christmas dinner and they can't find them. They decided to ask the police for a welfare check. The dispatcher said, "I'll have an officer get back to you." About 3.5 hours later, at 11:30 p.m., an officer finally calls Don back. The officer says they're going to come out to the house, meet Don and the family there, and, you know, try to do this welfare check, see if they can get into the house or figure out where Ryan and Heather might be.
They probably don't take welfare checks super serious, and they take their time, because a lot of people probably abuse welfare checks. They use them too soon. Someone's in the house. Like, someone knocks on my door, I don't even get up. What if they called the cops to welfare check me? Like, bitch, I'm playing Call of Duty, and you didn't tell me you were coming over. I didn't get up.
Yeah, but if you're not answering your phone, you plan to be at a certain place at a certain time, you don't show up, then you're not answering your phone, neither is your girlfriend, and they go to your house, you're not answering the door, people get concerned, especially because, like I said, Ryan and Don were very close.
But in my case, I could not be picking up the phone because, right? You invited me somewhere. I was like, I don't think I can make it. And they're like, no, come on, come on. I'm like, nah, I think I'm not going to be able to go. And then I'm like, come on, come on. After the third time, I would say, okay, I'll be there. But then I just don't go because you gave me no out. So that could be why, in my situation. So basically, don't ever welfare check me, anyone.
Oh, we won't. But this isn't about
you. I'm alive.
This is about him, not about you.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
So the officers arrive at midnight. They knock on the front door. No one answers. They then start shining their lights in the windows because they have, you know, flashlights. The front window had vertical blinds, and there was a fan in the living room, so the vertical blinds were moving back and forth. All of a sudden, while one of the officers is shining his flashlight in the window, he says, oh, this doesn't look good.
Oh, no.
I think I see a body. We got to take a quick break to tell you guys about our friends over at Love Murder Podcast. Jesse Prey and Andy Cassette host Love Murder. I'm going to play their trailer for you. Their dynamic is awesome. Definitely go check them out.
First comes love, then comes marriage, and then comes murder? Unfortunately, that's the case for most of our victims on Love Murder. I'm Jesse Prey, one of the co-hosts of Love Murder. Love Murder is a podcast about hidden affairs, devious deceptions, and love gone fatally wrong. To get a taste of the show, check out episode 100, the story of a British aristocrat who marries a mistress and ends up paying the ultimate price when he decides to leave her to marry another. Or episode 81, about a Las Vegas black widow who spends years fleeing from justice after a string of 5 marriages ends in violent catastrophe. Or episode 86, where a husband pushes his beloved wife out of a 12-story Manhattan window and ends up revolutionizing how neuroscience is used in the courtroom. Find Love Murder Podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts.
Officers immediately made his parents leave the front of the house and wait all the way down the street at the beginning of the cul-de-sac.
Oh my God, what if they said you gotta go? I can't. No, I'm going in.
Well,
then sometimes in situations like this, the fucking cops are, I've heard of people getting arrested. Like, no, this is my family.
Yeah, well, the dad was very apprehensive about leaving and he got into a few arguments with cops. According to Ryan's dad and the police reports, cops didn't immediately enter the home, but instead waited almost an hour so they could obtain a search warrant. This is infuriating to me.
I don't know.
Because there is a criminal procedure called exigent circumstance. And cops will use this in an emergency situation requiring swift action to prevent imminent danger to life or serious damage to property.
Oh, yeah.
Or to forestall the imminent escape of a suspect or destruction of evidence. They will use this procedure, exigent circumstance, to make a warrantless search constitutional. And they use it all the time to bust down a door to get into your house. But they see a body through a window, someone who is unresponsive, and they decide to wait for a search warrant.
That boils my blood pressure because it makes me think of that school shooting where the fucking cops were just standing there.
Mm-hmm.
That boils my blood pressure. Just go ahead.
So, I'm sorry. When you see a lifeless or injured person through a window, you need to bust down the door.
But you got to do your job, bro.
But they waited. They then got the warrant, but still didn't bust down the door. Instead, they waited another hour to have a locksmith come and pick the lock. So they were unsuccessful in the front, so they went around to the back. But while trying to pick the lock in the back, they were totally shocked when suddenly the door opens and there's a young man fitting Ryan's description standing in the doorway. He has a black eye that is swollen shut and bloodstained smears running down the left side of his face. The officers were stunned. Ryan just stood there staring and said nothing. Don, Ryan's dad, says about 3 minutes after entering the house, the cops come from the backyard escorting someone in handcuffs, but he's all the way down the street, so he's trying to figure out who this is. He can just see somebody far away with a really swollen black eye. He quickly realizes it's his son and starts booking it, running down the street.
Wait, where'd you get that word booking it from?
From, I don't know.
Probably me.
So he starts running down the street.
Very fast. I have to interpret because that's normally my words.
The cops place Ryan in the back of the patrol car and refuse to allow his father to speak with or even see him.
I don't blame him on that part.
His father was crying because all this time he thought that Ryan was the dead body in the house. He begs the officers to let him speak to his son. He gets into a whole aggressive situation with the officers. And they just say no, and they won't even let him near it. At this point, there are about 10 police cars and helicopters circling the area. The fire department and paramedics show up and enter the house. They stay in the home for about 10 minutes and confirm that the body on the living room sofa is that of Heather Kwan.
Oh, homie might have did it. What's his name?
Ryan Waller.
Ryan might have did it.
And she had been laying on the sofa dead for hours. After the fire department and medics pronounce Heather dead on the scene, they leave. Ryan is still in the back of the patrol car, and he ends up sitting in the patrol car while they start investigating the crime scene for about 3 hours. Cops tell his father, Don, you guys got to go home because Ryan's going to the station.
Hell yeah.
So now the video of Ryan Waller's interrogation is infamous, Russ. I have never seen anything like it. What I'm going to do is discuss what happens in the room, and then I'm going to insert clips into the episode so that everybody can get a whole picture, but you're going to watch the interrogation as I go through the thing point by point, okay?
That was confusing,
because
but okay.
I want to have your like real reactions in the moment.
Okay.
So at about 4 a.m. now, Detective Paul Dalton, who was the lead investigator on this case, takes Ryan to an interrogation room and leaves him in there alone for a few minutes. In the video, you see Ryan walk in uncuffed, wearing a white jumpsuit, no shoes, he's completely barefoot, and he's got that big bruise on his face with a swollen eye.
Seems like his girlfriend fought back.
After Ryan sits at the interrogation table, he starts fidgeting a lot. There's actually a handcuff that's chained to the table. He starts playing with the handcuff, and then he puts it on and handcuffs himself to the table. He then begins to moan.
Definitely his first time being arrested, because Them handcuffs hurt.
Well, he then begins to moan, and then he puts his head on the table for a while.
So is he moaning like the TV when I'm sleeping at 2 in the morning?
No, he's moaning in pain. So he begins to moan. He puts his head on the table for a while. Then he stands up and tries to walk away from the table, but forgets that he's handcuffed to it. So he sits back down.
I was thinking like yanked his ass.
So then he's getting fidgety again. And then he grabs a blank piece of paper that's on the table and starts looking at it as if he's reading something. This all went on for about 9 minutes before Detective Dalton walks in and tells Ryan that they want to take pictures of his feet. So he needs to put them on the table. They then swab his feet and spend 9 minutes taking pictures of his feet and swabbing them because he was barefoot. He kept saying, "I just want to go to sleep." He says it multiple times. "I just want to go to sleep." And he's moaning in pain, which seems to annoy Officer Dalton a lot.
When I'm stressed, I always want to go to sleep, and I do.
Finally, Detective Dalton pulls up a chair across from Ryan and introduces himself. He says, "I'm Detective Dalton. Your name is Ryan." He says his birthday. He says his social security number and asks Ryan if that's correct. And Ryan shakes his head yes. Then Detective Dalton says, "Ryan, do you know why you're down here?" And Ryan shakes his head no. Dalton says, "You have no idea why you're here?" And Ryan shakes his head no again. He then tells Ryan, "Okay, I'm going to read you your rights. So you understand your rights, okay? Have you ever seen a cop show, you know, any of those cops shows like CSI? Ryan says, "No." "You've never seen a cop show?" Ryan says, "No."
"You don't have TV?"
He goes, "Wait, you've never seen cops?" Ryan says, "Yeah." So this whole time, Ryan is moving around, twisting, fidgeting, putting his feet up on the chair, putting them back down. Clearly,
you know what,
really though? Fidgety.
That's me the whole time we're doing this podcast. If someone had a video on me.
It's true.
I'm a very fidgety person. And like, you know, I was at the bar the other day where my sister works. And I'm like tapping my feet as we're talking. I don't really realize it, but it's a little soothing, I guess. And she's like, "Why are you so fidgety?" "Oh, you know, you're fidgeting." And I like stop. I'm like, "Oh, my bad." She's like, "I don't care." I'm like, "That's just how I am." So some people are like that all the time. And me, like, I shake my foot as I'm sitting here. Mm-hmm. I tie my shoe.
Yeah, you do.
Except when we have the camera on. Then I'm like, I got to sit still. It's like a kid in the classroom.
Well, Dalton reads Ryan his rights. And then he starts to ask him random mundane questions, like, "What's the highest grade you went to in school?"
"What's the highest grade you went through school?"
I don't know.
"You don't know the highest grade you went through?"
"Eighth.
Eighth grade? Did you graduate?"
"Yeah."
Do you have a GED?
"I don't know."
"You don't know what?"
I don't know. I just want to go home.
"Oh, you're not going to go home right now."
"So what?"
"What's the highest grade that you completed?"
"B."
"No. Not grade, as in letter grade. I'm asking, did you graduate high school?"
"No."
"And the highest you went was 8th grade?"
"Yeah."
"Do you know how to read and write, Ryan?"
"Yeah."
"Okay. Do you have a girlfriend?" "No?"
So, as you heard, Ryan was kind of hesitant to answer. He said, when Detective Dalton asks, "What's the highest grade?"
Now he's trying to play dumb.
"Gotten in," he says, "B."
He's trying to play dumb. Ain't nobody that dumb. He's trying to act like his brain don't work so he can get away with it.
You think that?
100%.
Well, then he says, "Do you have a girlfriend?"
That was a good question at that point.
You know a girl named Heather?
Mm-hmm.
You know Heather's last name?
Mm-hmm.
What is Heather's last name?
The one that lives there right now?
I guess, I don't know. Her name's Heather. What's her last name?
I don't know which name she's trying to use as her last one. She's trying to have a real last as her nickname, so I don't know.
What nickname does she go by?
Probably wants the last name, Kaiman.
Kaiman? How would you spell that? With a K or a C?
K.
Keep going?
I don't know.
He then says, "What happened to your face?" And Ryan keeps saying, "I don't know, man. I don't know. I just want to go to sleep. I don't know. I don't know." He just doesn't stop saying that.
He's playing dumb.
Over and over again.
He's playing dumb. It's his only chance of getting off of this crime.
You really believe that?
Yes.
Your profiler skills are telling you that.
Yep. She japped him. She hit him with something. She's dead. He's in the house. He keeps saying, "I don't know."
Okay.
It seemed, unless, you know, there were two people in there. You know, another person killed her, knocked him out, and left. That could be a possibility, too, because he got the big, it's a big-ass black eye.
Yeah, his black eye is big.
He doesn't know how to spell his girlfriend's last name.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't even know his girlfriend's last name, because his girlfriend's last name is Kwan, and he said Kaiman. Then Detective Dalton says, "Ryan, there's a dead girl in your living room."
Hey, Ryan?
Huh? Huh?
There's a dead girl in your living room.
She's dead?
Yes.
Heather?
I don't know. I want to know what happened in your house last night.
The girl on the couch is dead?
I don't know. If she's on the couch, she's dead.
Well, these people came over. Machine is dead. With shooting arrow, bow, and darts. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
They hit me and her with those. That's it. And Heather wasn't there. And Eric wasn't there. It was just me and Heather. I was there.
You and Heather were there. And then what happened?
And that's it. Richie and his dad tried to break in to the back.
Richie and dad? His dad?
Mm-hmm.
Who's Richie?
I don't know.
Well, you obviously know him. You know his name by Richie.
He used to live there.
Was he a roommate of yours?
He used to be.
They hit you and... They hit you?
Yeah.
Now it's Richie that hit you, not Heather?
No, Richie and his dad.
Richie and his dad. They hit you?
Yes.
Why?
Because they're trying to get their stuff. I don't know why.
And they had some kind of... bow and arrows?
Mm-hmm. They each had two revolvers and they didn't let off any shells.
So, as you heard, he said, he was saying, first he was saying Richie and his dad broke in with darts and bows and arrows.
And horses. He said they came through on horses, like Native Americans, with bows and arrows.
No, that's not what he said. And then
but now he knows stuff. Before he didn't know nothing.
Well, he said bows and arrows, then he said revolvers, then he said...
Okay, you just said they had bow and arrows. Now they have revolvers?
That's what I meant. They have revolvers.
They have revolvers?
Yes.
And then what happened?
And then they shot us with those.
They shot both of you?
Yeah.
Where'd they shoot you at?
I got shot in the eye.
You got shot in the eye?
I think so.
With a revolver?
I think. I don't know, man. I don't know. Fuck.
That he and Heather were shot with revolvers in the face.
But he'd be dead.
So I don't know about you, but to me, he's acting really weird. You said you think he was playing dumb because of how he was acting in the video.
Yeah.
But to me, he's acting really strange.
He's acting fidgety.
And fidgety and seems to be confused.
Ryan, why don't you tell me what really happened there? Because I don't believe...
I really don't know, man. I really don't. I don't know. I could tell you anything, I swear.
Well, I want you to tell me the truth. That's all I want.
Richie and his dad came there. And I don't know why. I don't know why. I don't know why, but they put me in sleeping hold. And, like, they put me in sleeping hold with the arrows and shit. Like, I lived through that crap.
Okay, they put you in a sleeping hold?
Yeah.
What is that?
I don't know, man.
You're telling me they put you in a sleeping hold. What is a sleeping hold?
I don't know.
So after about 40 minutes of this back and forth where he's not making a lot of sense and Detective Dalton just keeps pushing him for answers, Detective Dalton kind of stops for a second and he looks at him from across the table and he says, "Let me see your nose." He then closely inspects Ryan's face for about 30 seconds. He says, "Okay," closes up his notebook. He says, "I'll be right back," and walks out of the room. Another 20-ish minutes go by, and then Detective Dalton walks into the interrogation room with paramedics. And he says, "I can't believe this. You guys aren't going to believe this either." Dalton points at Ryan's nose and says, "This might be an entrance. This might be an exit. And this might be where it entered his eye." He also is acting like he has a serious head injury, which would make sense.
Who's he?
Ryan is acting like he has a serious head injury.
He got a black eye.
Which would make sense. Paramedics examine Ryan for about 5 minutes and then determine that Ryan was in fact shot in the face.
Wow.
Not only was Ryan shot in the face, but the bullet entered through the right side of his nose, exited through the left, and then went back into his eye. His eye socket completely exploded. The bullet got lodged into his brain, and fragments of bone from his eye socket all also got lodged into his brain. Ryan was suffering from a severe traumatic brain injury.
It's a lucky fella.
And now, since it's been so many hours...
He's not that lucky because all that he went through.
Absolutely not lucky. And now that it's been so many hours since he was shot, he has permanent brain damage, which would explain the interrogation footage.
Yeah, I was thinking that because
saw.
That's how people would act if they were trying to like get an insanity plea or something.
So you thought that whole time that he was acting.
Yeah, like he was trying to get off.
He was trying to get off. And your profiler skills clearly need work.
Hey, even Jordan missed a couple shots.
Well, good thing you're not the guy who was interrogating him, because it looks like Detective Dalton also felt that way, which was wrong. So he was immediately rushed.
Nah, but if you've been shot, that's different.
Yeah, but Detective Dalton thought he was like playing dumb or something at first.
Well, it seemed like that, but if he had a bullet hole.
So he was immediately rushed to the hospital and admitted to the ICU. He wasn't able to go to surgery right away because since it had been, at this point, a full day since he had been shot, he developed an infection in his brain and sinus cavity, and he had a severe brain bleed that was causing a lot of pressure to build up inside of his head. So Ryan had this incredibly delicate balance that, you know, the staff at the hospital had to keep a super close eye on him because the brain swelling could have gotten too bad and he needed surgery, but the infection was so bad that he might not have survived surgery. So they had to eradicate the infection while monitoring his head pressure. Ryan was finally taken into surgery 3 days later on December 28th.
Sounds like he might have needed some immediate attention.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, but, you know, these are cops. They're not medically trained professionals.
It doesn't matter. And I'm going to go into why that doesn't matter. You don't have to be a medically trained professional to get a suspect
to see a
medical
hole.
Treatment or to see a bullet hole.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So while Ryan was recovering from surgery in the neuro ICU, the surgeon spoke to Don, Ryan's dad, about another injury that Ryan sustained that wasn't even related to the gunshot. Ryan had a broken jaw. Years later, after reading the police report, Don and Ryan's legal team discovered that the broken jaw was from excessive force used on Ryan when he opened the door. When he first opened the door, in the police report, they say that while Ryan was standing in front of them unarmed, they told him multiple times to get on the ground. Ryan said over and over, "Why? What's going on? Why? What's going on?" Until finally, Ryan was, quote, led to the ground, which we know what that really means. And then he just laid there with his arms by his side. And when cops were yelling at him to put his hands behind his back, he just kept saying, "What's going on, man?" But he wasn't struggling too hard. He just wouldn't move. One of the officers wrote in his report that he then used a maneuver where they stick their thumb in your jaw. And it's like supposed to force you into a submission, I guess. It's like a maneuver that they're trained to use.
The only maneuver I've seen in New York is they use them clubs on your head.
Oh, God. Well, they use this maneuver. They actually documented it in their police report. And
I don't think they have clubs no more now that I think about it. You don't see them hanging from the hip no more. They're not supposed to beat people with a wooden stick.
Yeah, I don't see them have the clubs either. Well, this maneuver was the thing that broke Ryan's jaw. So Phoenix PD broke his jaw. Ryan spent 35 days in the hospital recovering from surgery. At no point did anyone from Phoenix PD attempt to reach out to Ryan or his family to check on him or ask any questions, even though Ryan gave Detective Dalton two names of the people responsible for this during the interrogation. Let's not forget, Heather Kwan is dead. There is someone who has died, and Ryan is critically injured, and the two clowns responsible for this are just outliving life for 40 days.
Well, you know it's two clowns, so obviously they're going to get booked.
Well, they definitely are.
That's good. I don't like unsolved mysteries.
Yeah, we're going to find out. We know who did it. So who killed Heather and attempted to kill Ryan? Like Ryan said, it was two men named Richie and his dad, Larry. Richie was previously a tenant of the home that Heather and Ryan now lived in. There are conflicting reports out that say he was their roommate, and a lot of people think that Richie was their roommate because during the interrogation, when Detective Dalton asked who Richie was, Ryan said he lived there, and Detective Dalton said, "Was he your roommate?" And Ryan said, "Yeah." He was never a roommate. He lived there before they moved in, and he had come over the house two times to ask if any of his mail had come to the house. Well, looking back, it seems like him coming over to the house was a way of casing the place, because Richie and Larry both had extensive criminal histories. They both had done time in prison, and they were known to be extremely violent, like father, like son, which is like why those people shouldn't breed, honestly.
True that.
Police were familiar with these two scumbags since they had been arrested multiple times. Richie was only 24 years old, and he'd been convicted of armed robbery as a juvenile and did 4 years in prison, get this, for randomly walking up to a dude who was sitting in his car, stabbing him in the chest, and stealing his wallet. He was 16 when he did this, and he only spent 4 years in prison.
Well, you gotta keep your doors locked, folks. I always lock my doors.
Even in the, what if your window's down in the car?
That's different, but I keep my doors locked in my car.
Well, this guy had his window down, and he just like walked over to the open window and stabbed the guy in the chest, which is insane. Richie and Larry were arrested 40 days after the crime, and they were booked. They're both serving a life sentence now for the murder of Heather Kwan and the attempted murder of Ryan Waller. But the story is not over. Ryan would then endure intense physical therapy, would have to move back in with his parents, and live the next 10 years suffering from multiple neurological issues, including seizures that were directly related to this incident. His father said he lived the next 10 years like an Alzheimer's patient, very forgetful and confused. And in 2016, at the age of 28, Ryan would die from a brain bleed due to his head slamming on the ground in a grocery store during a seizure he suffered as a direct result of this crime. The crime of being shot and the crime of not giving Ryan immediate medical attention.
Boy, did I get that one wrong.
You definitely got it wrong.
Well, if you're watching, that's how people would have acted. And, you know, the poor guy...
He was a victim.
Yeah,
he was a victim the whole time.
And the people who shot him were probably surprised that he was still alive to say that they did it.
Not only that, but, you know... Okay, I'm going to get into it because it goes even deeper than that. So while Ryan was still alive, he and his father, Don, assembled a legal team to sue the Phoenix Police Department and the city of Phoenix. But this proved to be unsuccessful. The Phoenix PD refused to take any responsibility. And in fact, in a deposition, when asked if suspects should receive medical attention, Detective Dalton said, "It's a judgment call on the part of the officers to decide if they need to give suspect medical treatment prior to being arrested." And that Ryan was clearly answering his questions. But as we watched the interrogation, this motherfucker was clearly confused by the answers that Ryan was giving him. Yeah. He had to clarify it multiple times. He kept going back saying, "What did you say? Huh?" To me, that doesn't seem like Ryan was clearly answering his questions.
Well, I don't know if I blame him that much, because someone that was trying to play dumb, or, you know, how we all heard about insanity pleas get you off.
Mm-hmm.
So people may have acted like that if they wanted to pull an insanity plea or something like that.
Okay. Well, he also says in the interrogation, quote, "He seems to have a brain injury," which would make sense. Dalton also said, "He just looked like he had a black eye, so I didn't think he needed medical attention." He said that during the deposition. Whereas in the recorded interrogation that's all over the internet for everyone to see, Detective Dalton literally said, when Ryan said, "I want to go home," he said, "You need a doctor. That's where you should go." Ryan said, "Who, me? Is it that bad?" And Dalton said, "Yeah, I'd say it's pretty bad." So, I'm sorry. This is not consistent. Lastly, when scumbag Larry, the actual murderer, was arrested, in his mugshot, you see him wearing a hospital gown. Do you want to know why? Because when he was arrested, a canine took him down and bit him.
Oh, shit. So he got medical attention.
So what did they do? They took him to the hospital to get medical treatment for the bite before being brought to the station.
But that's probably why they probably brought him, because they saw the dog bite him. Sometimes you see someone with a black eye, you think it's not a big deal.
I don't care. You can have this opinion where you...
I'm not a cop defender or a cop accuser. I'm a realist.
And
I was in that situation, I may have made the same decisions. That would be like, he just got a black eye, he'll be all right. I've seen tons of people with black eyes.
Well, you know what I've seen? I've seen tons of people come into my ER cuffed, handcuffed, escorted by police officers who've been tased, who have been, their face, you know, been assaulted, their face is beat up, who have multiple injuries, black eyes, to come get medical treatment before they get arrested. This happens all the time. The fact of the matter is that these police officers made a quick assumption that the victim was actually the perpetrator because he was the boyfriend of the murdered victim on the sofa. So they assumed it was him, even though they didn't find any firearm in his house. They took him to the station. They made him sit in a police car for 3 hours, then took him to the station and made him sit there for hours.
Well, that sucks for him, but the cops didn't necessarily know.
No, they're trained to know. They should be trained to know. And cops...
We have the least trained police out of the whole world, though.
But,
so they're not very well trained. You kind of... It almost seems like they got to use instinct. And if your instinct is shit, you're going to do a bad job.
I don't know, Russ. I'm sorry. I can't. I'm not giving them an excuse.
I don't want this kid to have gone through what he went through. But the cops didn't kill this kid. And the cops didn't do the murder and were almost... blaming them for what happened. They could have done a better job. They could have went in sooner. You know, they could have did this, check on him. They could have done things better, but I'm not blaming them.
I'm not blaming them for what happened to him. I'm blaming them for not taking responsibility in their part in his long-term injuries. Because Phoenix PD knew they messed up. They knew it. They knew it wasn't right. And instead of taking responsibility for it, they had the medical examiner change the death certificate of Heather Kwan from December 25th to December 23rd.
That's fucked up.
According to the police, a pizza delivery man on December 23rd was apparently the last people to see the couple. But on the original death certificate, and even on her tombstone to this day, it says that Heather died on Christmas Day, which means Ryan was shot on Christmas Day. And according to Ryan, after he recovered from surgery, he can recount the events surrounding the incident, and he confirms it was also Christmas Day. And during the interrogation, Dalton says multiple times, what happened last night? And the interrogation happened on December 26th. So why later on, when they get a legal team together and try to sue the city, do the cops decide to now have the death certificate changed to December 23rd?
Well, sounds like they're covering their ass at this point.
Absolutely. They're covering their ass because they know that it doesn't matter if someone is a suspect or not. You're innocent until proven guilty, and you have to go get medical treatment. It's like obvious.
Well, in this country, sense. It's guilty until proven innocent. So
exactly, that's the problem.
Yeah, once you're arrested, it's prove your innocence, not them prove your guilt.
Detective Paul Dalton lied again by claiming that the medics said that it was an assault. But since the interrogation was recorded and we can clearly see what the medics say, the medics come into the room and they actually say, come on, bro, you got to go to the hospital. It looks like you were shot in the face.
Where are we going? We got to go to the hospital. Get checked out, bro. Looks like you got shot right in the face.
He also said that he went to the hospital the next day to check on Ryan, but was told by the doctor that it's most likely just an assault. This is what he says in his deposition, okay? And he also said that the doctor told him that Ryan was being rude to the nurses and the staff.
He was shot in the face.
First of all, no. Just no. His dad was at the hospital immediately after and spent the next 30 days next to his son and said he never saw any police officer come by and ask any questions. The ER attending and the trauma surgeon immediately determining that he was shot in the face two times. And told his family
that.
Had
two bullets?
Yes, he was shot.
There was only one hole.
One was gone. No, he had three holes in his head. One bullet was lodged in his brain. The other one, you know, had an exit wound.
Damn.
So they immediately determined that he was shot as soon as he got to the hospital. As a trauma nurse, I can tell you from the second a gunshot victim is called in, and we call it a GSW. When we hear GSW, we know what that is. It means a gunshot wound. So as soon as a gunshot GSW is called in, we are prepping the room and it's all hands on deck. Within a matter of 10 to 15 minutes, the patient is stripped and gowned, an IV placed on a monitor, blood is drawn, and they're rushed to CAT scan, literally 10 to 15 minutes from rolling in the door. So I'm telling you without a doubt, within an hour, they knew he was shot. So for the cop to say that he showed up hours later or the next day and the surgeon and doctors told him they think it was just an assault and he wasn't shot is a complete lie and it's total bullshit. And it pisses me off because also a doctor would not say to a cop how rude the patient was to staff. Because as an ER and ICU nurses, when someone with a brain injury comes in, they're super unpredictable. They are rude. They can be violent. But we're used to it. Like it literally doesn't faze us. It's not something that we would even like make as a comment.
Well, he literally got a hole in his head.
Sorry, I'm just getting really heated over this. The city of Phoenix brought an expert who claimed that a 6-hour delay made no difference in his outcome and that he would have the same neuro deficits if he had received immediate medical attention. This is not true. It's a lie. That is completely false. I'm telling you it's not true. And even Don, his dad, hired a renowned brain surgeon. He paid this brain surgeon $10,000 to look over his son's case and examine everything. And even the brain surgeon says, of course not. everyone knows time matters when it comes to brain injuries. Everyone in medicine knows this. When it comes to strokes, people come in with strokes. It's called the golden hour. It's literally the first hour is the golden hour. Because if you can get treatment started within an hour, then that will dramatically decrease someone's deficits in the future. And this is a fact. And you are somebody who just sustained a traumatic brain injury from an accident. You were rushed to the hospital, to my hospital before I knew you. And you literally got thrown into the trauma room, stripped. They did everything I just said.
They cut my clothes they had, off. They my had, dingling was out and it was cold.
They had you in CAT scan, I'm sure, within a half an hour, not even.
I couldn't even
sooner.
Flirt with the nurses because it was cold. And when it's cold, you're not at your best.
They had you at CAT scan right away. I'm sure they had trauma surgery right away down
fine,
to talk
though.
To you.
I had no brain injury. I cracked my head open, but I felt good.
My point is how fast it moved. Everything was moving quickly because everyone knows with brain injuries, you have to move fast. And that 6 hours going by is going to dramatically increase your chances of long-term problems.
Well, you know, I had that nurse that said, I had my nice leather jacket on. She said, do you like this jacket? I said, yeah. And she cut it off right after that. What a bitch.
So my point, though, do you understand what I'm trying to say? Is that the police were trying to cover their ass and say that he was shot on the 23rd so that it didn't look like they delayed care.
I can see that.
And this expert that the city brought in claimed that 6 hours doesn't matter. This is all lies. And Detective Dalton lying under oath in a deposition when the interrogation is on the internet and recorded for everyone to watch. It's infuriating. It's infuriating for this family. Because of the expert hired by the city, the judge presiding over the case dismissed the case 3 days before the trial was due to start. So the Wallers couldn't even be seen in a trial. They couldn't even have their case presented.
Why?
Because the judge dismissed it based on this expert saying that the 6 hours didn't matter and that it had nothing to do it, like whether he went and got medical attention right away or he waited until when he actually got it. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't sound like much of an expert.
No, it sounds like an idiot because it's not true.
Easy, Bubba.
The Wallers.
Why'd I call you Bubba?
The Wallers could have filed an appeal, but if they lost the appeal, they would have to be held responsible for all the city's legal fees, which would have made them go bankrupt. So Ryan and his dad made the agonizing decision to not pursue any more legal action. The family of Ryan Waller has decided to also not pursue further legal action after Ryan died, to get Larry and Richie responsible for his murder. Because technically they are. They're responsible for his murder because he only died as a result of seizures that he sustained from being shot in the head.
Wow.
And they have decided not to pursue any legal action towards them because they're already in jail for life. And the family just doesn't want to go through any more of this. It's agonizing.
Yeah,
for
that's
them.
Not going to bring them back.
Yeah.
I understand that.
It's hard emotionally.
It's like reliving it over and over.
Exactly. But all the family wants at this point is for the Phoenix Police Department to just take responsibility for their part in this. That's it. They just want them to take responsibility.
Yeah.
What makes me so livid about this case is that Ryan was a victim who was treated like a criminal based on assumptions. And I don't care about your detective instincts. The fact that this kid could sit in front of you talking and acting like that for 6 hours before you even thought for a second to get some medical attention to him is disgusting.
It's very wrong, and I feel bad for the kid.
Yeah, it's terrible. So as someone who has treated countless criminals, like I've treated literally countless criminals, it's imperative that you separate your judgment from what's in front of you, okay? I have so many stories about patients who've come in to the ER, cuffed, tased, beat up, who are criminals, who have done horrible things, But it's not my job to judge them. It's my job to stabilize them so that they can be judged later. And the same goes for Detective Paul Dalton. I hope you hear this. You ruined this kid's life and this family's life, and you deserve to pay for your negligence, and I hope karma gets you. That's what I have to say to him, because it's disgusting and unprofessional, and I think it's crazy that this kid is dead over this. And I think it's crazy that he sat in front of him. This is the thing, Russ. You don't have to be a medical professional to know, watching that footage, that this kid was confused. You think he was playing dumb because you're not trained in anything. This detective has been on a police force for a really long time and conducted multiple investigations and has been in interrogations many times. When you talk to somebody who has what he had, which is called expressive aphasia happens when you think a word in your head, but a different word comes out.
It happens to me.
No, it happens to stroke patients and people with severe brain damage and TBIs. So it was literally like when he was saying they came in with darts and bows and arrows, he thinks he's saying revolver.
Oh.
But what's coming out is darts and bows and arrows.
Wow, that's... So maybe no matter what, they just have to take people to the hospital first and then they can interrogate them? I don't know.
Yeah, why not? If someone is injured...
I don't know why.
Why not take them to get medical treatment first? Why not? They're a suspect. They aren't proven guilty yet. Expressive aphasia happens... In stroke patients, it happens in these types of situations. And it's really obvious to me while watching that footage that this dude was super confused.
People play that game all the time.
It doesn't matter.
I don't
matter.
Want to keep repeating myself over and over, but people play that game to try to get off. And they've watched TV, so they try to get like, oh, I'm going to get an insanity plea or something like that. So now when he tried to cover it up and he kept, you know, didn't admit a mistake, I don't like that. It's not illegal to make a mistake, but when you're in that situation, it's kind of life and death, so you should know a little better.
Absolutely.
Than a dude sitting at a table with a whiskey and a microphone.
Exactly. You're not a cop. You don't do this for a living, but he is. He's a cop. He does this for a living. And like you said, okay, yeah, you made a mistake. You ruined this kid's life. At least say I'm sorry. At least don't wait 40 days. To go after the two suspects that this guy named. You didn't come to the hospital. You didn't check on this kid. After you found out, oh, yeah, he was shot in the face. He's actually a victim. You don't even have the heart to come and check on this 40 kid.
40 days?
This case just made me really, really angry for so many reasons. But it's a super tragic story. And Ryan's family really wants this story told because they want their day in court against Phoenix PD. And they just want them to take responsibility. They want this story out there because they want pressure put on police departments to handle these types of situations differently and to train police officers better in these types of incidences. I mean, there are other countries where it's not just cops that show up to a crime scene. I think it's like Spain or Italy. They have a whole task force that shows up to a crime scene that includes a social worker, psychiatrists, like people, medical professionals, and cops all show up so that people can get a really clear view of what's happening. Because in this country, cops are always on the defensive and they don't trust anybody. And we need to do better because this is not okay. So that is the tragic case of Heather Kwan and Ryan Waller. And
let's not forget about Heather. We spent a lot of time talking about Ryan.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, she was shot in the head, execution style, while cowering on her couch, afraid of these two men who just broke in after watching her boyfriend get shot in the face.
Piece of shit.
And she died instantly. But like, it's just all, it was just because they wanted to rob the house. That's it. That's
the reason.
They
don't even have that much. Like, you're robbing people that, you know, they ain't got a ton.
Yeah. They just wanted to break in and rob them.
They thought it'd be easy that, you know, they went for the path of the least resistance, probably.
That's a shame. So that's it. That's our case. And his family really wants the story told so everybody share it. So this story gets out there. It's not been covered by a ton of podcasts. A few have covered it. You can check out This Is Monster's YouTube channel. He did a really great documentary on this case. And if you want to watch it, interviews with Ryan's dad and just watch the footage, definitely go over there and check out that video. It's really good.
All right, folks, that was it.
Well, I want to say thank you to everybody who shared your Spotify Wrapped this week. We had so many people who shared their Spotify Wrapped.
That was cool.
It was a ton.
Geez, it was a little overwhelming, but not overwhelming in a bad way, overwhelming in a good way, like very appreciative.
Yeah.
But you guys want to hear this Mimbo talk?
All right, everyone. We'll have a wonderful week.
Don't forget, wifecrime.com. We got cool ass shirts and cups and maybe a hat. I don't know. There's other stuff there, too.
There's a lot of stuff there.
And that helps me get drunk.
Check us out on Instagram at Wife of Crime Pod and Facebook at Wife of Crime, the Crime Family, and Patreon at Wife of Crime Pod. And until next time, we'll see you later.
Stay cool.
Peace. Bye. Peace.